Welcome back to the Deep Dive, where we take that whole stack of information you have, you know, your surveys, your analytics, market research, and we turn it into something genuinely useful.
Something compelling.
Exactly. And today we are diving headfirst into something that is, I mean, absolutely foundational for anyone who needs their message to actually cut through the noise. We're talking about audience modeling.
Yeah, this is the essential pre-work. I always think of this process as the ultimate shortcut to really understanding who you're talking to.
Right.
And, you know, how to tailor your message so perfectly that it almost feels bespoke.
Mm-hmm.
And right at the heart of all this modeling is one key concept, audience segmentation.
Okay, let's unpack that. Segmentation.
It's really just the act of taking your entire user base, and it doesn't matter if that's 5,000 people or 5 million, and splitting them into smaller, more digestible groups.
Groups that share something.
They share significant common characteristics. Now, at first, those might be broad things, demographics, like age or where they live. But the deep dive really begins when you start linking those to specific behaviors, their interests, and, you know, their motivations.
And we're not going to just leave you hanging with abstract theory here.
No, absolutely not.
Our mission for this deep dive is to walk you through the specific five-step blueprint that the source material gives us for building a really robust, resilient audience model.
It's a process that moves you from just sort of hoping your content works to actively engineering that connection.
It helps you stop guessing what people want and start investing with a purpose.
So if we look at the strategic scope, I mean, segmentation is incredibly flexible. You can segment broadly, but the real power, and the sources really highlight this, it comes when you focus on these deep commonalities.
What do you mean by deep commonality?
We're talking about grouping people based on shared values, maybe common goals, or even just distinct habits in how they consume content. It goes way beyond this person is 30. It becomes this person is 30, and they are actively looking for professional development content during their commute.
And focusing that finally, I mean, it delivers some really powerful outcomes.
Yeah.
The research points out two major strategic benefits of doing this well.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is, I think, deeply psychological. Good segmentation makes your audience feel seen, recognized, and valued.
Yeah.
If you get a message that speaks to a very specific frustration you have, one that's only shared by a small group, it feels like it was written just for you. And that builds loyalty almost immediately.
And the second benefit is just purely practical. It optimizes how you use your resources.
Time, money.
Right, time is finite. Your budget is finite. Segmentation lets you shift resources away from those generic, you know, scattershot campaigns that try to please everybody, and instead focus that effort exactly where it's going to generate the highest return.
So you start wasting effort on segments that just don't align with your core goals.
Precisely. It's the difference between sending out, say, 1,000 generic emails versus 300 highly personalized ones that get a 30% conversion rate.
You're just working smarter, not harder.
Exactly. And before we really dive into the nuts and bolts of the method, it's critical for you, the listener, to know what the deliverables of this whole process should be, what you'll have at the end.
Okay.
So once you've done these five steps, you should walk away with three concrete things. First, you need 2 to 3 well-defined audience segments, each with a clear profile of their unique needs and their underlying motivations.
2 or 3 feels like a key number, right? The sources really emphasize quality over quantity. Too many segments and you're just back to chaos.
Absolutely. The second deliverable is crucial for actually using this data. You'll have 1 or more detailed personas created to represent each segment.
The human face of the data.
That's it. And third, you'll have clear guidelines on how to personalize your messages, your content formats, distribution, and even your tone for every single one of those groups.
That is a very comprehensive action plan. So let's get into the blueprint itself. It's a logical 5-step flow, and it starts right at the foundation, the data.
All right. Step 1 is data collection, the foundation. This is the phase where you're gathering all your raw materials, but you have to be strategic about what you collect.
And I think people often rely way too heavily on just demographics. You need to know the behavior.
Exactly. Behavioral data is absolutely crucial. So if you're running some kind of communications project, this means tracking things like, you know, listening frequency, time spent on content, the topics they always skip.
Or even where they drop off on your website.
Yeah, that tells you what they value and what they find. Well, tedious. And the sources for this are really varied. It's not just one dashboard.
No.
You need both quantitative and qualitative data. The sources advise pulling from surveys. That's the qualitative, the why do you do this side,
mm-hmm.
and then combining that with your direct analytics.
Which is the quantitative, what do you actually do side.
Right. And you round it all out with broader market research to catch trends you might not see in your own little pool. Step one is a success when you feel like you have a messy, detailed portrait of your users, not just a clean spreadsheet.
So once you have all that data organized, then the real intellectual heavy lifting starts with step two, identifying the segments.
This is where you use that wealth of data, the quant and the qual, to start grouping people. You're looking for those statistically and practically significant similarities that bind users together.
And this is where things like clustering algorithms can come in handy, right?
Especially
with big data sets.
Oh, for sure. They help you find correlations that aren't immediately obvious. It's about discovering these little pockets of people who don't just share an age group, but a shared frustration or a similar aspiration.
I love those examples from the source material that really illustrate this shift. A segment isn't just young adults.
No, it's much more defined.
For instance, a segment might be university students highly engaged in social causes. That immediately implies passion, but also time scarcity and a preference for clear impact.
Or the other example they gave, professionals age 30-45 seeking volunteer experiences.
Right. That suggests disposable income, but very limited free time and a real need for highly organized, reliable opportunities.
Those descriptions, they immediately give you a sense of their mental landscape, their motivations.
Okay, those examples sound great, but how do we make sure we're not just creating assumptions instead of actual insights? And when do we know if we've gone too granular? Is it possible to oversegment?
That is a critical question. You've gone too granular when the cost of creating unique content for a tiny segment outweighs the impact that segment provides. That's why we stick to two or three main segments.
To maintain focus.
Exactly. And to avoid assumptions, the segmentation has to be based on the measurable behavioral data from step one, not just a demographic guess. If the data doesn't back up the commonality, the segment is invalid.
That brings us beautifully to step three, creating 2 to 3 personas. And this is, I'd argue, the most crucial step for the humans who have to implement the strategy.
I agree.
Because this is where we stop talking about generalized groups and start talking about a specific relatable person.
A persona is essentially a detailed profile sheet, but it's more than just a list of facts. It's an empathy tool. You have to include the basics. A name, like Julia or Marco, a brief backstory, age, profession, interests, that's the scaffolding.
But the real value is in the details that actually drive your content strategy.
Absolutely. The most crucial components are their specific needs and frustrations. What keeps them up at night? What problem are they trying to solve? If you don't know their frustration, you don't know what problem your content is solving for them.
Okay.
Then you look at their preferred consumption format. Is it video, podcasts, newsletters, and then crucially, their preferred frequency? Do they check in every day or just once a month?
So when you have that detailed profile, a name, a face, a story, and a clear list of what they need and what annoys them, it becomes almost impossible for a content team to write generic copy.
Yeah.
You're not targeting segment A anymore. You're writing a message that you know will solve Marco's problem. It's a really powerful mental shift.
And once you have these detailed profiles, you move to step four, associating content and messages. This is the strategic tailoring step.
So you have the blueprints, and now you have to connect the segment's characteristics directly to your communication.
Exactly. You're mapping everything. The topics, the tone, and the all-important call to actions, or CTAs. And the sources provide a great comparative example for this.
Yeah, they do.
For a segment like the highly engaged but time-crunched university students, the Julia types, they might prefer really rugged, practical content.
They want the answer now?
They want it quickly, maybe a one-click action, a short, direct CTA. They need speed and practicality.
Whereas the professional segment, the Marco types, they might be looking for deeper, more inspirational stories, maybe case studies or detailed project descriptions that let them really reflect on the impact before they commit any time.
And their CTA might be something like, download the comprehensive guide to our quarterly projects. The content length, the format, the commitment, it's all completely different based on that profile.
This is also where you start defining your tone of voice for each segment, which I know we'll get to, is the critical next step after the model is built.
It is. If your content is tailored to inspire Marco, it's going to use more formal, strategic, measured language
than the urgent, community-focused tone you'd use for Julia.
Precisely. And that brings us to the final step, step five, updating the model. This is the dynamic part. If you spend all this effort building a beautiful model and then just treat it like a static document,
you've wasted your investment.
You really have. Your audience evolves constantly. I mean, new technologies change consumption habits. Just think how quickly TikTok revolutionized attention span. And life circumstances shift. A university student becomes a professional. The model has to evolve with the audience. And the recommendation from the sources is clear. Review these personas every 6 months.
6 months, or whenever new data comes in that challenges what you think you know.
Exactly. This just ensures your map always reflects the current terrain.
Okay, let's take a second to really solidify this. Let's dive into those mini examples from the sources, Julia and Marco, because I think this shows how those five abstract steps result in a really concrete, actionable communication blueprint.
Yeah, this makes it real. Let's start with Julia. She's 23, a university student, and her passion is clearly environmental advocacy. Huh. We know from our behavioral data from step one that she primarily uses short-form video for information. That's her preferred format and frequency.
And because we did our step three research on her needs and frustrations,
mm-hmm.
we know her biggest constraint is time. She's busy, so she's looking for volunteer opportunities that are brief, local, and require almost no planning.
She needs those clear, direct CTAs, the ones that say, show up here for 90 minutes this Saturday.
Right.
The content for her needs to be urgent and impactful. You can just picture it. A 15-second vertical video.
Yeah.
Maybe it shows a map of a local cleanup with a clear link to sign up right there. She doesn't need a 4-page strategic plan.
She needs instant utility and a super low barrier to entry.
Then we shift dramatically to Marco. He's 38. He's an engineer, which immediately tells us he's probably detail-oriented and operates on a fixed full schedule.
His motivation is clear, though. He wants to give back to the community. But his habits are totally dictated by convenience.
Right. So his preference for podcasts is a function of his commute. He's using that downtime effectively. He also appreciates a monthly newsletter, but, and this is critical, he needs projects that are described really well.
Detailing the commitment, the scope.
The measurable impact. He wants depth over speed and convenience over urgency.
So the content strategy for Marco is completely different. You are not trying to catch him on TikTok.
Not at all.
You're giving him a polished, in-depth audio narrative he can download for the car. Maybe you'd accompany it with a PDF that outlines the quarterly impact metrics of the organization.
The contrast here just perfectly illustrates the failure of generic messaging. Mm. If you focus your entire strategy on rapid-fire CTAs and vertical video content that's perfect for Julia, you are completely ignoring Marco.
You're ignoring his mental space, his consumption window, his need for depth.
Segmentation makes sure you meet both of them where they are.
So what does this all mean for your next project? This audience model, built through these five steps, it's a vital tool for purposeful communication. It moves you away from just generic marketing and towards, well, highly efficient resource use.
It's the difference between hoping to connect and strategically connecting.
Yeah.
And that strategic connection, it immediately dictates your very next tactical decision. The sources are clear on this. Once the model is built, the immediate next step is using it to adapt your tone of voice to match the expectations of these seglings.
Absolutely. The words you choose, the attitude you project, it all has to align with their needs.
The tone for a time-crunched student focused on immediate action should probably be energetic and direct.
While the tone for a busy professional who's seeking a reliable commitment should be measured, trustworthy, and strategic.
So we'll leave you with this final thought to mull over. If you currently use one consistent tone and one consistent content frequency across all of your communications, which of your potential segments are you inadvertently alienating?
Are you talking to the dynamic, community-focused Julia types or the busy, mission-focused Marco types?
Think about the segments you might be silently pushing away simply because your current tone and your chosen frequency don't match their specific needs or, you know, their consumption constraints.
Think about that and how these five steps can help you bridge that gap. We'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.